Welcome to Journey into Kabbalah, a five-part series presented by the Keepers of the Holy Chalice, beginning in mid-January of 2011. My name is Mark Pemberton. The first class in this series was originally recorded on January 16th of 2011. Due to a technical problem, however, I've had to re-record the first portion of it, so you'll hear my studio recording for the first half hour or so, and then the live class will resume following that. The title of this class is What is Kabbalah? And I found that there really is no simple answer to that question, so we'll do our best to work around to something that approximates a definition of it, so that at least you'll have a picture in your head of what this thing called Kabbalah might be. I think it might be useful to start with to give you a little bit of my own background in the subject. The first coven that Leanne and I were members of back in 1996 or so had a dual basis. They were both fairy tradition and Western magical tradition, and the latter was characterized by their study and use of the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, something that I had never heard of before. I saw a three-dimensional model that they had of the Tree of Life, and I pointed at it and I said, "What is that?" And they said, "Oh, that's the Kabbalah. It's a mystery." So I figured that either I would be allowed into the mysteries or I wouldn't, and I really didn't give it much further thought. Much later on, along about 2003, we learned that the Assembly of the Sacred Wheel, which we were at this point now part of, was going to be holding one of their infrequently held climbing the tree rituals. Now, this is something that it's a huge deal, and the reason that they only do it every few years is that it takes a lot of coordination and a lot of people's time. The way it's done is they lay down 10 cloth circles representing each of the spheres on the Tree of Life on the grounds of Sealy Court down in southern Delaware, and then a person is assigned to conduct a mini-ritual in each of these circles. They represent that circle, and they try to bring as much of the understanding of that to their ritual as possible. The participants in the ritual start at the bottom of the tree, at the earth plane, and they follow it upward, stopping at each of the 10 spheres, and receiving this ritual. And by the time they exit at the end, they're completely brain fried, but they have had an experience that they will talk about for years. So in early 2003, Janice, our high priestess at the time, told us that she would like us to volunteer to give one of these rituals, to be an aspector, as we call it, of that sphere. And this was some months in advance, so we had a lot of catching up to do. In order to do this, a couple of members of Keepers and some members of other covens who were geographically sort of close to one another formed a group that we called the KFC group, something that may have or may not be the Kabbalah Focus Consortium or just Kabbalah Fried Chicken or something like that. And we met about once a month and used Dolores Ashcroft Nowicki's books, The Shining Pass, to give us a shared understanding of how the Tree of Life worked and to embed this in ourselves enough so that when we finally got to the point where we were giving this climbing the tree ritual, that we would have it down cold. And that actually worked fairly well. The thing that I discovered during the course of this is that as we were going through the path workings in this book, information from somewhere was being downloaded into my head. And by the end of it, I knew things that I had no reason to believe that I should. So this is the first part of what I believe is what Kabbalah is. It is a received teaching. It is something that when you have committed yourself to studying it, somehow from the other side of the veil, from the astral plane or whatever, Kabbalah is studying you, and it is seeing whether you are a worthy receptacle, and if you are, it starts putting information into you about it. Now, that may sound a little bit spooky kooky, but I can only speak from my personal experience. The other thing about the Tree of Life and Kabbalah generally is that it is probably a mnemonic device. It's said to be from Judaism, and it may possibly be from earlier than that in Egyptian religion, but it compresses into a relatively small space a lot of information about how the universe works. It is a representation of the process of creation. My understanding of what the Godhead, the supreme being that rules the universe, is that it is so far above our understanding that we can't even formulate words for what it is. I don't believe that this being is a him or a her, and it doesn't really sound right, but what else are you going to call it? The only thing that I am fairly certain that I know about the Supreme Being is that it creates. And the process of creation is something that not only took place at the beginning of the universe, but which takes place every second of every day since the beginning of the universe. That right now, the universe, everything about reality is being recreated every split second. And only because our brains work the way they do, we perceive this as being a continuous flow of time. The best explanation that I've heard of this came from Dr. Julian Barber, who has theorized about the nature of time and actually the unreality of time. And he has given me the image of you may remember the old trays of slides that you put into a slide projector, and each one was a different picture that you would click into place. Now imagine that all of the slides in the tray are pictures taken just very slightly apart from one another, and each one taken individually is a representation of that moment in reality. But if you look through the whole tray quickly enough, it gives the illusion of being in motion, which is really the principle that's used for a film projector. So I consider it possible that every moment of reality, every moment that has always existed, still exists, and everything that will exist exists already. And it's just a matter of our perception moving into that slide, if you will, and then passing on to the next slide. So I'd like to try to tie together some of the foregoing with a little bit of a thought exercise. Most people who are involved with the magical or Wiccan paths are familiar with the concept of thought forms. And from reading about this, I see that there are a variety of different ways of explaining this. So rather than to give you a textbook explanation of it, I'm going to have you just look inside for a second and find yourself standing perhaps in a childhood backyard covered with snow, and you decide that the snow is the perfect kind of snow to make a snowman from. It's kind of just a little bit damp, and when you reach down with your mittens and picking it up, you can compact it into a snowball very easily. And you put the snowball down on the ground, and you begin rolling it around and packing more snow into it until it gets big enough so that you can start rolling it forward, and you roll it around the yard for a little while, and it gets to be a good size, and you park it where it was, and then you make another snowball and roll that around for a while and stack it on top of the first one, and then a third on top of that, and you've got some rocks in your pocket, so you stick those in there for eyes, and let's see, you've got a carrot, so you snap that off and you poke the carrot into the middle of the face, and a couple of forked twigs become the arms, and maybe you've got a hat someplace that you plunk on top of it, and you stand back and you hold up your thumb this way and that and say, man, that's a perfect snowman. Well, okay, so I've caused this snowman to appear in your head. There are a lot of archetypes of snowmen, but probably the most familiar one is Frosty the Snowman. So you know just what Frosty looks like, and you can call him up in an instant in your head, sometimes even if you haven't grown up in a place where there was snow. That is a thought form. And it's a powerful thought form because a lot of people over a lot of years have thought about and made a mental picture of Frosty the Snowman, of snowmen generally. The useful thing about constructing our thought form out of a snowman is that the stuff of the astral plane, as best I understand it, is something like snow, wet snow, but instead of being something that you can form with your hands, you form it with your thoughts. So when you think about something, anything, the stuff of the astral forms together to create an image. If you're very good about it, you can create an image that's got the capacity to make sound. You can touch it. You can walk around it. You can smell it if you like, if it has something that you can taste. If it's a snowman, for example, you can stick your tongue out and you can feel the cold, slightly granular snow there. So you understand what I mean when I say you have the ability to create in the astral, and this is in the form of thought forms. So how do we apply this to the idea of Kabbalah? I said earlier that when we were studying Kabbalah for the climbing the tree ritual, my mind was filled with images and ideas that came from where I know not. And I believe that they originated from the thought form of Kabbalah, the thought form of the Tree of Life, and all of the ideas associated with this. And this thought form came into being a long time ago. And I'm loath to talk about history when speaking of the origins of Kabbalah, because nobody really knows. There are some speculations that it was from ancient Egypt, and it may have been from the 13th century BCE and the tribes of Israel, but it really isn't known, and truthfully, it isn't really important. The important part is that for a goodly number of years, people have thought seriously and deeply about the subjects that are treated in the knowledge of Kabbalah. Those subjects are, they can be exhaustive because they really encompass the whole idea of creation and how creation and all of the things within our reality are connected to one another. So as you expand your awareness of Kabbalah, you begin to get information from that thought form. And the more you open yourself to the possibility that there is further knowledge to be gained that you can't get from a book, the more it will become available to you. This is one of those things where it's fairly easy to demonstrate to yourself that believing in something makes it possible. Next, I'd like to give you kind of a high-level overview of the bones of Kabbalah, the bones being that device called the Tree of Life. It's called the Etz Chaim in Hebrew, and Chaim you may recognize from the phrase Lachaim, to life. Before I go too much further, I should mention that I'm going to be throwing around a few Hebrew words here, and you should understand that the Hebrew language was dormant for many centuries, and it wasn't until sometime in the 20th century that it was taken up again as a spoken language. So there's some dispute about how things are properly pronounced. I believe, though, that in speaking about Kabbalah, as long as you understand what I'm talking about and other Kabbalists understand what we're talking about, that it's just fine. It's not one of the big deals of understanding Kabbalah. The Tree of Life, as we know it, was probably first described in a book called the Sefer Yetzirah, which may or may not have been written around the 2nd century BCE. Some say that it was written much more recently. Some say that it was written a heck of a lot longer ago than that. It doesn't really matter. But it is within this book that the Tree of Life was first described as 10 spheres out of nothing. And it's very specific about that. It says 10 spheres, not 9, 10 spheres, not 11. So this is something that, for whatever reason, it's important to understand that we start with the number 1 and we end with the number 10. And we'll go over this in greater detail in the next session. But for right now, let's start with nothing. At the top of the tree, sphere number 1, there's also something called the veils of negative existence. And while we know something about the nature of the one, the absolute, that is to say, the Godhead, which is at the top of the tree, we know that this is the genesis of all creation. We don't know too much about the veils, but I'm thinking that it's there for a reason. It's probably just there for the reason that it serves as a foil for that oneness, that all that nothingness is what it came out of. And just so you'll have this information should you ever need it, I'll give you the names of the three veils, and they are Ein, which means nothing, Ein Sof, which means limitless nothing, and Ein Sof Aur, that means limitless light. And you can think about these in whatever way you like, and perhaps at some point you'll become enlightened to them. I'll tell you that that hasn't happened to me yet. So, once we get the idea of nothing out of the way, I'd like to refer you to the diagram in the handout on the correspondences on the Tree of Life. And for those folks who are going to be listening to this on a disc, I will also provide the graphics on the disc itself. So the one that we'd look at right now is called Names and Titles, just so that we can give you the numbers and the names of things, and we'll pick up the rest of it and what it means later on. So beginning at the top of the tree, number one is Keter, and Keter translates to crown. Going down to the right, number two is Chachma, and that's wisdom. Going to the left, number three is Bina, understanding, and then we cross down into the right to four, which is Chesed, and that means mercy. Then again to the left to number five, which is Geburah, which some people say is Gevurah. I prefer Geburah because this has a B in it. And that's translated as severity. Down to number six, which is Tiferet, beauty. Number seven, Netzach, victory, and back over to the left again, eight, Hod or Hod, splendor, and then down and to the right to number nine, Yesod, foundation, and finally straight down to number 10, Malkut, which is kingdom. Note that all of those words that contain the TH, I'm not pronouncing it as th, but as t. And this is just a matter of preference. Some people say Malkuth and Kether and Tifereth, etc. But really, you can pronounce it the way you wish. Now, connecting all of the spheres on the Tree of Life are paths, and they are 22 in number. And that's an important number, but I'll get to the reason for that later. The paths on the tree connect every sphere to every other sphere, almost. There are a couple of exceptions, and if you study the tree, you'll find where those are. And I believe that's for a reason, but I believe that we'll also need a little bit more grounding in the subject before we can discuss that. As I said, there are 22 paths, and this is a significant number because it correlates with the number of letters in the Hebrew alphabet. It's been said that some alphabets are more magical than others, and they usually put Sumerian and Germanic runes and Hebrew up near the top of that list. But a case can be made that magic can be found in just about everything, including your own alphabet. Since there's a greater history on some of those older alphabets, people tend to focus on them first rather than the common garden variety alphabets. In the case of Kabbalah, I'm willing to concede that Hebrew has the big mojo, if for no other reason than it has a long association with the subject, and the thought form, which is, as you may have noticed, a big thing with me, the thought form has significantly associated itself with Kabbalah. One of the things about the Hebrew alphabet is that the letters each have a number associated with them. And it's not a matter of Aleph is one and Bet is two and Gimel is three and so forth. The numbers are a little bit more complex than that. And they really comprise the whole counting system, the whole mathematical system that was part of ancient Hebrew as well. Later on in this series, we'll spend a little time with Gematria, something you might call Kabbalistic Hebrew numerology. And some people have found it of use, and you might even find it the way to unlock the secret of the universe, but, well, your mileage may vary on this. If you take a look at the chart of the Hebrew alphabet that I've provided, you'll note that there are three different types of letters, and I've picked them out in red and blue and black. The red letters are the mother letters, Aleph, Mem, and Shin, and they are three in number. The blue have seven letters, and they're called double letters, And finally, there are 12 single letters. Now, each of these three numbers, 3, 7, and 12, have long and deep magical associations. So you have things like the three modalities or the three faces of the goddess. 7 is the number of the elder planets, the number of the days of the week, and it's no coincidence there are 7 days and 7 planets. And 12 is the number of hours in the day, is the number of months in the year, and it's the number of the signs of the zodiac. So by breaking things down into these numbers, the ancient Hebrews gave some deep association of numbers and their view of the world. I've also provided a graphic called the Cube of Space that shows how the letters of the Hebrew alphabet can be laid out in a three-dimensional cube. So the three axes, up and down, left and right, and back and forward, are represented by the mother letters. The ends of those, of which there are 7, and the center make up the double letters. And finally, the 12 edges of the cube are the 12 single letters. So take a look at that, and you can see that that has some application in the real world. It also has some application in the magical world. In addition to the cube of space, the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet map directly onto the 22 paths on the tree. And I have provided a graphic showing how those paths are arrayed from the top, path number 11 that goes between Keter and Chachma is the letter Aleph, and it is also the Fool card of the Tarot. So if you speak Tarot, you'll recognize that 22 is the same as the number of the cards of the major arcana. So to summarize the answer to our question, what is Kabbalah? We can say that it's a way of describing the process of creation, the process of the creation of the universe and creation in general. We can say that it has ancient roots, though that it's probably impossible to say how old it is, and that the information that has been found out about the Kabbalah exists not only in this world, but somewhere outside of it. As a student of Kabbalah, it's possible for you to hook into a body of knowledge and a body of wisdom that is not only accessible through the intellect, but through a means that one might call received teaching.